Many of us, may be surprised to hear that conversion therapies are still practiced in religious communities throughout Australia. Can you tell us why and where they're being practiced and what goes on in these so-called therapies?
So what the report has found is that these practices still continue today. Across Australia, we had participants from almost all states and territories, but they're really occurring within small church communities, particularly evangelical church communities. And what they involve is all kinds of different types of conversion practices, including kind of group therapy, counselling sessions, exorcisms, which really aim to try and cure or fix, as they say, the sexual orientation or gender identity of people.
Yeah, right. So these are happening, would you say, more in, country towns, or are they really like in cities and stuff as well, or are they kind
it's
of hidden?
Both. Yeah, both in rural and in metropolitan areas. But I think the reason why most people think that this doesn't occur anymore is because when you look at, you know, in the 70s and the 80s, there was this really strong sense in the community that, sexual orientation was still a medical diagnosis and it was within the medical sphere that these happened. But now it's taking place within religious communities. And so it's much more closed off, and it means that people who aren't involved in those small and closed church communities often don't even know what's happening.
Yeah, right. I can definitely understand that, not being part of, a close quarters religious community myself. You don't really know what goes on in the communities around you. So the stories of the 15 survivors of the conversion therapies are quite harrowing to read. What are the long-term psychological effects of the trauma experienced in these therapies?
It's very sad to hear the stories and exactly what they've been through, but the survivors of the conversion therapy talk about the long-term harm that it has on their life, about feeling like they had to keep themselves hidden, that they were broken, that they were sinful, that there was nothing they could do to fix themselves, and essentially that's caused long-term harm, anxiety and depression and mental health impacts, but also kind of closing yourself off from close friendships, going through periods where you don't feel like you can go to any social events or where you can touch other people. So it's had a real impact on their ability to form relationships, to trust others, and to have kind of meaningful, happy lives in the community because of how much it's made them feel like they were wrong and they were sick and that other people wouldn't want to be around them.
Yeah, that's such a horrible impact to have on someone as well. The Greens' motion urging the government to condemn conversion therapy passed the Senate in September. Is this a step in the right direction? How does legislation need to be changed to eradicate this?
Legislation is a really important first step. But what we also want to say is that while you can pass a law that says that conversion therapy is wrong and should stop, that's not enough on its own, because what could happen and what we've seen happen in other countries is where there is a legislative ban only, the practices have actually been driven further underground. So what you need in addition to legislation and those kind of appropriate penalties is funding for survivor support programs, funding into research, ways to support children in schools to make sure that they're not referred out to conversion therapy practices, education about how harmful it is within schools and within government agencies, and a whole range of other non-legislative options if you really want to stop it from occurring. And that includes ensuring that there are ways for people to reach out within faith communities and talk about how harmful these practices are, how ineffective they are, and how really there's no way that you can perform these practices and say that you are doing the right thing, because they cause so much long-term harm to the people who have to endure those kinds of practices.
Absolutely. I'll admit, I'm quite surprised that legislation only passed in September. Why do you think it's taken so long to get legislation to be enacted on in this sphere of human rights?
I think that most people assumed that this was a problem that had gone away and that it wasn't occurring here in Australia. I think you hear a lot of it taking place in the US, and most people don't know that it is still occurring here. And so what we tried to do with our report was really highlight that this is a practice that is still happening in Australia today, that it causes such extreme harm, and that we need stronger laws and support for survivors to educate people about the harm caused if we're ever going to stop it.
So what can people in these faith communities and even in the larger community as well do to help create a safe and more loving environment for LGBT people?
I think it starts with thinking about where the conversion therapy messages come from. It's really, they've been proven to be ineffective and harmful, and having allies and people who support the LGBTQI plus community saying anytime that they can that telling people that they are broken or sick because of who they are is profoundly psychologically damaging, and that what we should be doing is embracing people as whole people, as human people in all communities, including our faith communities.